Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Gary Klein is here for our final show of the year. Chris Tobin is too. We're talking about studio design. Gary's written an article in a new ebook from Radio World, along with other authors, that talk about designing for smart studios. It's coming up now on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the Calrec Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from Calrec Audio.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And today we're going to be talking about studios. I'll introduce our guest in just a couple of minutes. I'm Kirk Harnack. Glad you're here, just post-Christmas. We're in that weird time between Christmas and New Year's when you're never really sure what day it is. You're never really sure what time to get up or not. What are you working today or not working today? Is your schedule the same or is it completely different? Can you sneak a little time off? The boss won't notice. Everybody's got a different situation. And that's what a lot of us are dealing with, not being sure what day it is. We should bring in Chris Tobin and see what he thinks about it. By the way, I'm Kirk. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio, obviously, here in Nashville, Tennessee. And thanks a lot to the Telos Alliance, Frank Foti, and everybody else there who give us the day off. And it's really nice that we get to spend time with friends and family. There's my story. Now, Chris Tobin from, where are you at, Chris? New York City?
I'm in New York City, yeah. Yeah, having a good time, relaxing, kicking back. And yes, today is Thursday, Friday, Wednesday. I'm not sure what day of the week it is.
Do you have that same problem days too?
Nah, it's not a problem. It's intentional. I'm purposely laying low. I'm taking it easy, catching up on things personally, and making sure I can have some fun when the new year starts. So that's how I'm looking at it.
And we've got New Year's Eve in the middle of next week, right? Like, isn't it Tuesday night?
New Year's Eve, yeah. Tuesday night. Yes.
Do you brave Times Square, right? Because you live there.
I don't have to. No, I used to work it for over 12 years. I used to work that event. Yeah, it was fun. But, recently I haven't had to do it. And a friend of mine who lives literally 4 blocks away, overlooks Times Square. So I sit on a nice balcony, enjoying a nice drink, conversation, good food, and watch everybody else gather into the corrals.
And the difference between you and the million poor slobs that are standing on the street in Times Square is, I'm guessing you have a bathroom handy.
Yes, I do. No Motorman's made for me.
Motorman's made. Oh, gosh. Hadn't heard that. That's good. All right. Well, here we are in this, again, the strange week, and we're going to bring in one of the finest experts on studio construction, because he sure has designed a lot of them, and that is Gary Klein. Gary's joining us from, I guess he's in Atlanta. Gary, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
I'm the finest studio engineer you know. You must be thinking of somebody else. Yeah, I'm in Atlanta tonight. I'm in Atlanta. Believe it or not, man. For just a few days. Yeah.
What did you you arrived first class later earlier today, right? to be with us.
I arrived about today is Thursday. Christmas was yesterday. I arrived Tuesday. Yes, I was in a seat number lower than 7, so we were good.
That's good. Hey, for those of you listening, Gary is on his laptop in a studio. And little things go wrong here and there all the time. Gary was a very much a last-minute guest, and he just didn't have time to get everything hooked up in the studio. Last time Gary's joined us has been like from the back of a stretched limo in Paris or something like that, wasn't it?
It was, and Kirk, around the 24th of January... It'll be a Thursday. I'll be in Paris. We can do it again if you like.
Okay.
We'll do it again.
As I recall, the connection wasn't great, but it was okay. We could hear you and we could see you most of the time when there were streetlights overhead in your limo, stretch limo with the glass top.
Right. The new iPhone's supposed to do better in the dark. So we'll see.
It does. My wife got an iPhone 11 Pro. And when you go to take a picture in a dark area, like a restaurant, right? Subdued lighting, you can tell it goes into this mode where but when you press the button to take the picture, it takes it a moment. It has to gather some light, kind of like a telescope.
Yeah, I've seen that. Well, we'll find out in a few weeks if you like. We'll do it.
All right. All right. Well, we'll have a cameo. We'll have a cameo. Hey, and you know what? If Gary, if you're out and about at some remote location, at least in the U.S., what you need to do is this: Max Connect. I'm holding in front of me what looks like an ordinary cradle point modem. This is the industrial design. You know, the one that's got a lot of, it's got metal. It's made of metal, aluminum, or something. It's got a heat sink on it. But this is a cradle point modem. But what's special are the SIM cards. Yeah, now, yes, this one has two SIM cards. It connects to either Verizon or AT&T. But what's special is the carrier that you're actually using, that is the named carrier, is Max Connect Wireless. And Max Connect is owned by a broadcast engineer, Josh Bone, with Bone Broadcast in Alabama. And Josh has made arrangements for Max Connect Wireless to have a higher priority on its data packets. When you connect this, you're hooked to the data network of your carrier, Verizon or AT&T, your choice, and you get a higher priority than all those other schlubs who are doing Facebook or, you know, texting with their girlfriend or whatever they're doing. You get priority. You can be in a stadium full of thousands of people at halftime, and they all whip out their phones to update somebody on something. And you're doing a live broadcast with a Max Connect wireless modem, and you've got data. And by the way, today's quick story, I took this Max Connect wireless data modem with me to Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and not known for its fabulous cellular coverage. And I was staying in a resort, a rather busy resort, lots of cabins stacked on top of cabins, as some places like they are. And I ran this thing. I just did a test for a few hours. I sent it from my office right here. I sent it micro MPX at 400 kilobits per second from Nashville, from a nice wired fiber connection here. And I picked it up in Gatlinburg, Tennessee with this Max Connect and ran that into an Omnia MPX decoder. Perfect. I didn't see a single bad packet for the several hours that I tried it. So that's just one application. This is meant for doing live remotes for broadcast or for television. We do our show over this sometimes. Gets you about 5 megabits per second upload and download, but it's reliable 5 megabits, no drop packets. And I can't guarantee that, but you know what? It works every time we use it. Thanks a lot to maxconnectwireless.com for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech and for providing our remote connectivity when we are out on the road. Check it out. All right. Welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. And Gary, you recently wrote an article that's appeared in an ebook. Now, you know, Radio World does these ebooks from time to time, and I find them terrifically helpful because they'll pick a topic, and the topic they'll bring in several authors. Some people may work for manufacturers because they do have a lot of firsthand knowledge. Other people may be independent consultants. People like you, Gary, an independent consultant, or other experts in the field. Talk to me, first of all, about this ebook, Gary, and what is it covering?
Oh, hi. The ebook covers just what it says on the front cover. It's about designing and or building a modern radio studio. It's not the first time that Radio World International has covered the topic, but, you know, technology is changing, as we all know, so fast that every few years, a discussion on something along the lines of modern studio design, well, it's time to update it, right? And get some fresh perspective and discussion with, you know, experts from around the world. And so this book covers everything from new studio technologies like, you know, movable or non-permanent walls to the way you integrate social media into the studio, video and visual radio, which has been covered even in its own ebook because it's a topic until itself. And some what they call thought leadership articles from the manufacturers that talk about how they see things coming together in a modern studio, including cloud-based services or cloud-based storage, something that's also another hot topic around the world and is gaining some traction here in the United States when it comes to radio broadcasts. So that's what the book covers. My part of the book, I took a little bit of a different approach than the other people. I didn't need to talk about, you know, AOIP or USB or video so much in technical detail like the others did. I spoke more about or wrote more about how to go about getting a project started, how to keep it on track, and how to, you know, sort of ensure that it gets completed on time and on budget and takes into account the needs of the organization so that everybody's happy with it. And at the end of the day, it produces not only great content and great sounding content, but contributes towards the bottom line, contributes towards revenue, which is, you know, another hot topic today among all the senior managers of radio. How do we increase revenue? How do we build growth? And I think as engineers, if we can find ways to help everybody do that, I've said this before on this program, I think, if we can find ways to do that, then that's good for them. And that's good for us because we look, you know, we look great too. And we should, because we all work very hard at what we do. So what I'm saying is everybody can buy a nice microphone. Everybody can pick out a decent mic processor. You've got the budget. But how do you turn any of that into something that's revenue producing? And what other, you know, new ideas, new technologies are out there, again, to contribute towards the bottom line? And so that's in a bit, you know, in a couple of minutes here, what I try to cover in that book and what I've actually covered in some other books and other talks that I've given. Kirk, you and I have been on a few panels where we've talked about things along those lines.
You know, Gary, I hear you saying something that I just don't often hear, and you're very smart to bring it up, and that is revenue producing. That is, what can you design into a studio, or what can you help the people who are paying for the studio, the people that own the broadcast facility, how can you help them turn their mind, not just from, hey, we need a studio that everything's easy to reach and four people can sit in there and blah, 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 the kind of things that we often think about. But you're asking the question, how can we design the studio so that we have the flexibility to produce revenue with the studio and not just maybe by playing radio ads? And I got to believe you're going to later on this hour, you're going to be talking about, you know, how can we make sure sight lines are good for video? Or how can we make sure that we can do revenue generating things in the studio, maybe when it's not on the air? Or how can we make this studio work for more than one big brand, or maybe a brand that we're going to have in the future that we haven't thought of yet? So, and I just say that because I tell you what, we're going to make sure that there is a link in the show notes where people can click and download this ebook. You do have to fill out some data about yourself, because that's, you know, the modern publishing, that's the way it works. Tell them who you are and you know, what your buying authority is, stuff like that, standard stuff. But you're going to download this ebook. I downloaded a few days ago. I read your article, Gary. I didn't read the other. Sorry. But that's the kind of thing we're going to be talking about. And Chris Tobin is going to be involved in this conversation too, because Chris, I know that in your work in New York City, you've had to consider those same things. And we're going to get into it more after our first break. But Chris, kind of tell us a little bit about your thought process that's gone into and what you've talked to management about when designing studios, keeping in mind you're in a very expensive real estate place in New York City, and you've got to design them with revenue generation in mind, as Gary was talking about. Chris?
Basically, I walk in, usually we've done this a couple of times, just ask, what is it you want to do? What's the end game? What do you want to accomplish with this space? And then how do we work it so that it generates the revenue? As I always try to push for the workflow, I look at the workflow and if that's contributing or taking away from the success. And then I sit down and I meet with the actual end users. In the case of two operations I worked at, which was sports and news, it was sitting with several different presenters throughout the day and night to figure out what they did. And I don't meet with them in a conference room. I actually sit with them in their environment so I can understand better what they're trying to do. And it helps them to bring to mind things that they sometimes are upset with. You know, we discovered a few things about the studios that were in place for 25 years, that some pitfalls that nobody even thought of or asked about because they kept forgetting when they were in a conference room. So that's one of the things I usually try to do. It's the same thing I've done with a friend of mine with some of his podcast clients. I've actually gone to their houses and sat down with them in their little room and said, okay, show me what you do. What's your problem? And boy, I'll tell you, it's a treasure trove of information comes out when you're in the environment they're trying to work in, rather than sitting formally in a conference room or, you know, any other office space. That's my first set of steps.
We'll be asking Gary some very specifics about that, about those conversations. But Chris, one thing that I think, Chris and Gary, that we as engineers, especially you guys who've been around, you've seen a lot of studios, you've built a number of studios. I know Gary has all across the country. Chris, you mostly in the New York City area. But you have been to some celebs' homes and built studios for them. But remember, the people for whom you are building a studio may not be thinking of all the things that they could be doing in there in the future. And we as engineers, sometimes we've seen more ideas than they have. And I guess what I want to bring out is the fact that it could be okay for we as engineers to bring this topic up. What else might you want to do in here? You know, let's think about the future. And as Gary has alluded to in our pre-show conversations, this doesn't have to mean that the studio costs more or costs exorbitantly more, but it does mean that we plan it out so that you have some flexibility in the future. That's what's coming up. That's part of what's coming up. Hey, our show This Week in Radio Tech, episode 473, with Chris Tobin and Gary Klein and me, it's brought to you in part by Angry Audio and Studio Hub. You know, a few months ago, we all got a little worried when we heard Studio Hub was going away. You'd call your favorite dealer and you'd say, hey, I want to buy a Studio Hub cable for my new studio, or I got to hook up a CD player or whatever. And they'd say, oh, Studio Hub's closed the doors. Sorry, closed the doors. Well, guess what? They haven't closed the door. They're open now. Angry Audio has purchased Studio Hub, and everything that they made in terms of cables and adapters, you're going to find them with Angry Audio. And, you know, this is my favorite adapter. This is one of the original style of Studio Hub, where you've got a female RJ45 connector here, and that breaks out to whatever professional or even RCA connectors that you want, or bare wires if you like. And with this kind of cable, you do need to add some length of Cat5 cable. And that's where the good news comes in, because right now, if you order a Studio Hub adapter cable with the female RJ45 on it, you get a free Cat5 cable. How long is this thing? Is it 7 feet long, 5 feet long? I forget how long it is. What? Oh, 7 feet. 7 foot long, blue shielded Cat5 cable. It's got the pinouts right here if you need it, because, you know, that's what Studio Hub does. They tell you cool things. And this is free. Just ask for it free with every one of your purchase of an RJ45 style. But if you don't want that style, they do have the other styles. Here's a 6 foot long cable with the male RJ45, the one that's, you don't need the patch cord for this one. It's kind of built in. High quality audio cabling terminated properly in an RJ45. And that is a bit of a trick. But the people at Studio Hub have that figured out, and you can get that too. Call your favorite dealer. They have these for AES connections, for, you know, AES3 or AES-EBU. They also have it for analog connections. Go to angryaudio.com. and look at the huge selection of Studio Hub cables and adapters that are available right there. Hey, our show continues in just a minute after this word from Calrec.
Type R is Calrec's first native IP-based mixing console. It is fully AES-67 and NMOS ISO-4 and ISO-5 compatible as defined by SMPTE 2110. Connectivity via Cat5e utilizing COT switches and power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches to minimize cabling. Its 2U core has integrated I/O, so you're instantly up and running, and it can power up to 3 independent mixing environments, each with their own separate DSP resources. Type R's surface is modular and expandable, consisting of 3 slimline panels, each of which are user-definable with layouts saved and recalled quickly between shows. It's available in 4 DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, making Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
Thanks to Calrec at calrec.com/twert. Go to that URL. Let you know that we sent you there. All right. It's Kirk Harnack and Chris Tobin talking with Gary Klein. And hey, I'm going to take a few minutes off, Chris and Gary, and both of you are great talkers on the subject, because I know it's close. It's near and dear to your heart. Gary's just written this article. So why don't you two just dish a little bit on studio design for profitability and revenue generation, and you know, how you talk to customers, to radio broadcasters, or other content creators about that topic. How do you bring it up? And how do you go forward with that topic of properly designing a studio? Gary, you want to start?
Yeah, sure, Kirk. I guess it's not that hard to start the conversation. You just have to be with the right people. So the first thing I would recommend you do is, and I've said this before in panels, and I think in my piece in the ebook that we're all talking about tonight, first is you got to figure out who you're going to have your discussions with. Some of that will be common sense to you. You know, you may have a program director, you may have a market manager, general manager that may or may not want to be involved. These folks may or may not want to be involved at different times throughout the process. They may want to be involved from beginning to end. They may only want to be brought in when they're absolutely needed, because people are busy and people usually trust us to figure certain things out, and hopefully they're not micromanaging you. But then you may need to think about other people. For instance, my digital director or social media director or digital content director or whatever it's called at your station. You may want to talk to the general sales manager or national sales manager or, again, whatever, you know, managing director, whatever the title is, wherever you work, and bring together a few people that are stakeholders and definitely in the know about revenue generation for your facility and programming that oversees on-air talent and content, and then you as the engineer. And perhaps if you have a right-hand person or somebody else in your engineering team or somebody from IT that you think should be involved. And then I think in the beginning, you bring everybody together and we start to talk about what are we doing here? You know, some of it's already known. I mean, you know whether you're building hopefully one studio or 10 or 15 or even 40 studios. You know whether you're building them in the facility you exist now. Maybe you're updating or, you know, building new within your area. You know, maybe you're playing musical chairs with studios as you move things around and you upgrade room to room. Or maybe you're moving everybody out to another building. Or perhaps you are combining more than one facility, maybe two facilities when companies merge, that often happens, and you're bringing them either into one of the existing facilities or into another new place. All of these things have probably happened at one time or another to the folks that are watching the program tonight, or whenever you happen to be watching it, because I guess you could be playing it back during the day, so correct myself. But you bring those folks together and you have a sense of generally what you're going to do, but then you start to ask questions like, okay, how many people are we going to have in each room? What's the purpose of each room? What's the future look like? Should we design for additional rooms and for this room or that room or the room that's a Studio X that's got the big morning show host or morning show team, or potentially you're building a room for a morning show or evening show. They get their own room, like Howard Stern, for instance. You know, what do we need to do in that and set up conversations with the people that work in that room, which may be producers and associate producers and ultimately the air talent. And you start to figure out, you know, how big it's going to be, how many mics you're going to have, get a sense of furniture, to begin early furniture drawings. And then you talk with the sales folks or the people on the revenue side. You know, what can we do? Okay, they're going to name the studio, so we want naming rights. So is that going to be a sign in the room or outside the room or both? Should we light that sign? Are we going to bring artists in? Is this a new studio or a music studio? Do we need monitors? Do we need LED walls? If you look at the front cover of that ebook, that's Capital in London. It was my suggestion that they consider using that as a front cover. That entire wall is an LED, and you can change the video and the logo at any given time. If somebody calls in on the phone, like on Skype, you can show their face on the wall. If you go to YouTube and Google, or you know, search in YouTube rather, you'll find examples of that. So you begin to talk to the proper stakeholders after you identify them, and you bring up, Kirk, to answer your question, the concept of revenue. And to your point, which is a good one, we know certain things. We read a lot. We watch a lot. We may have worked on projects. So we can inject into the conversation things along the lines of, how about some monitors? You're going to bring people in that are going to talk about their record or their book. Let's get some monitors, and we'll position them such that when we do camera shots, whether it's still or video photography, we can get their album cover in there or their book cover in there. That means we're going to video. So now we need camera angles. And so how many camera shots do we want? Where will people be sitting? And how many people max do we think we'll ever have? Or what's the typical allotment? We get into all of those things. Chris, maybe you've got some other ideas. But you basically start to ask about revenue and what they're thinking of. And then you also inject some technical ideas that you have that might help or enhance it. You kind of, you listen. And then you offer advice as you see necessary. A lot of times the people you're talking to have worked at other stations or in other facilities, maybe even come from television or video, and they may also have ideas and some great concepts that they've seen in their previous work environment. What do you think, Chris?
No, I totally agree. The points are spot on. Excuse me. Yeah, I guess the hardest part is just being able to listen and then gather up the information and then figure out timelines and budgets and determine, okay, are we going too far in one direction or not? I know I worked on one project where they were talking about all kinds of LED signage, and I was like, guys, you do know the cost involved. I get where you're trying to go with this, but you might be going a little too far into the weed direction. And they're like, no. Of course, when it came down to the finances. That was the first thing that got the value engineered out. But it was interesting listening and understanding more about what their operation workflow was about. So I think, Gary, your points were spot on, and you got to look and listen to everything and try and stay focused where you can and look at the bigger picture at times and say, hey, you know what? I saw this technology. I was traveling through such and such country. I'm like, this might just work here, or maybe there's something to consider. And that's what we bring to the table, which is nice, as the engineering or technical folks, and then working with the people that are creating content and say, here's what we're thinking. What do you think? Like, ooh, this is interesting. And they help them to open their ideas or their mind to other things, which helps everybody in the bigger picture. So, yeah, no, but you're definitely spot on. In the ebook, I read through it. It was everything touches exactly what you need to get started with and follow through, which is perfect. It was a nice approach, Chris, too, taking it. Yes.
Chris, you gave me another point that I didn't go into detail on that I should mention when you were speaking, and that is, you know, watching what people do and workflow. And some of what we can do to help with revenue, you know, is obviously definitely about what we put in the studio, how we configure the studio, how easy we make it for people to work, the design, the warmth of the room, if it requires warmth, so guests can come in and they'll open up and they'll have great interviews. Sometimes it isn't desired not to be warm. Maybe you're doing a sports station. Maybe it's more high energy and impactful. So the colors you choose and the way you lay out the furniture and the way people interact is set differently than, you know, a jazz station and the way they bring people in and interview them or something like that. Some of that's just common sense, but stuff you need to think about. But some of what we do to enhance revenue is not just about that. It's about the behind the scenes workflow and content distribution. In this ebook, there's at least one or more articles that talk about multimedia content generation. Well, that's audio, that's video, that's podcast. It could even be speech-to-text conversion to make it all searchable. And so when you produce a show or are producing content in a studio, live or nonlinear, how easy are you making it for the producers to disseminate that? Is it easily or automatically chopped or edited for podcast distribution into 15-minute or 30-minute or hour chunks? Is there metadata added? Are you able to easily take the video content that you may have generated in the studio using either a manual or automatically switched camera system? Is it easy for the folks within minutes of the broadcast ending or during the broadcast to take that content and get it out there online on any number of different sites that we typically publish to, whether it's YouTube or TikTok or Instagram or, you know, you choose? How easy is it for them to do that? And are they trained to do that? And even though they might be monetizing it today, we all know we ought to be doing some of that, if not a bunch of that. And your revenue team will figure out, if they haven't yet, how to monetize it. But you want to be ready. You don't want them to come back to you after studio's built and ask for this or that. Now you're running more cable. Now you're thinking about sight lines and camera angles and lighting that you didn't prepare for. And maybe it'll all work out. Maybe you'll get lucky. Or maybe it's going to cost you extra money to do it later rather than when you were building the studios initially. Now, of course, if you're not building new studios, you have studios. Maybe they're 2 years old or 3 years old. You invested a lot of money in them, and they've come back to you now to ask you to add some things to the studio, then maybe that's a different, you know, discussion. That's an add-on later. But we're talking about building or designing or upgrading existing studios. So these things, you know, they all matter. So it's the design of the studio and the look of the studio, both for the people that come and visit when they're there and for the people that are watching from home or on their mobile device, but it's also the behind-the-scenes workflow. In a modern day environment, a modern world, in today's world, we have to think about where content is sent and how it's consumed. And I know that's cliche. I know we talk about it a lot, but when it comes right down to it, as an engineer or a media professional, we need to think about how those things happen. And that now includes not just microphones and cameras, but now it's servers and internet bandwidth and storage and media asset management and speech to text where appropriate. It's that sort of thing. Graphics, lower third. If some of these terms don't resonate with you because they haven't come up in your market, then it's time to do some research and insert yourself into the conversation in a department head meeting. People will go, wow, we can do that. We can do this. Oh, we can do that on RDS. We can We can do that with HD radio. We can put artwork on the radio. We can send that out to all of our mobile devices at the same time. And I realize that there are people at stations are watching this that are saying to themselves, probably to me, through this, through the computer, hey, we know all that, which is great. But there are a lot of people who don't or are not doing it yet and have the capability to do it. So that's what we're talking about.
This is really fascinating. And just the fact that we're thinking about these things. That, Gary, to me, that's kind of what a consultant does. A lot of us in the workaday world, you know, we're stuck in the forest and all we can see is the trees, but we kind of don't know, you know, where the whole forest is or where everybody else is in the forest or out of the forest. So it's great to step back. I got to tell you, offline, our producer, Suncast, made a terrific comment. Gary, the way that you're talking about analyzing workflows and what a business, you know, what's the real business interest here that the business has and how can we help the people to accomplish those things, that this works. The advice you're giving works outside of radio too. And he says many people don't think things through very well when redoing something that folks use every day. It's easy to redo what we had, but it takes some sitting down, talking, walking around, thinking about the future to redo what we don't have and where we are going. So anyway, hey, we got to take a quick break. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store. They are terrific people there. Love them. And this is where you can also get some fine equipment like Inovonics, like the Aran 655. We're going to hear about that. Really useful tool. We'll be right back.
The Aran 655 is the latest addition to the Inovonics family of rebroadcast receivers. Designed specifically for FM broadcast translators, also referred to as relay transmitters. The Aran 655 is unique as an uncompromising DSP-based HD radio and FM receiver combined with a powerful 3-band audio processor and dynamic RDS encoder. IP connectivity adds streaming capabilities, and a web browser interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. The Aran 655 gives you maximum flexibility for program sources. Select program audio from analog FM, digital channels HD 1 through 8, streaming sources, and analog or AES digital line inputs, all with assignable failover audio backup. The internal RDS encoder allows you to customize your RDS messaging. You can use incoming off-air RDS data, convert HD radio pad data to RDS, convert streamed metadata to RDS, or receive IP telnet data. Comprehensive audio processing includes gated and windowed AGC, a unique syllabic leveler, 3 bands of compression, and both wideband and independent HF limiting. Easy setup is achieved by using 10 factory presets and 10 customizable presets. The processor also supports dayparting, allowing automatic preset changes to follow different programming formats throughout your broadcast day. The front panel has an OLED display and jog wheel with intuitive menus for easy setup, advanced control, and editing for all operating parameters. The Aran 655 dynamic web interface gives you total remote control of the unit, from any PC or mobile device. A comprehensive set of menus includes a quick overview of now playing info, input-output control, processor options, RDS encoder, alarms and notifications, SNMP settings, and much more. You can also listen to the live audio broadcast streamed through the web interface.
You know, I just love this product, the Aran 655 from Inovonics, and they have a whole range of products. Did you know that you can go to the Inovonics website and you can try out lots of their products remotely? You can play with the web interface of Inovonics products. They just go to the website. We'll have the website in our show notes, and you can check that out. Thanks a lot to Broadcasters General Store, the dealer for Inovonics. And you can check out Broadcasters General Store at bgs.cc or call them at 352-622-7700 and tell them to, you know, put a sharp pencil on that quote, and they absolutely will. They are just terrific folks. All right. We're talking with Gary Klein and with Chris Tobin about studios, intelligent design for studios, how they could be changing. And Gary's message pretty much is pretty constant. Involve all the stakeholders in these conversations. And you may not have ever thought to involve the national sales manager in a conversation, but it's worth having that conversation. As engineers, I think a lot of times a guy like me, I would be reluctant to bring in people that they don't really have a horse in this race, but they might. And it would be great to get everybody's ideas about this. And when you get the studio built, everybody feels like they've been heard. And who knows, you might hear some really good ideas and incorporate that into your studios. Gary, I don't want to change the direction of the conversation here too much, but I know that you've built some pretty innovative studios in Chicago and San Francisco, Dallas, perhaps some other big cities as well. Quite a few, actually. Well, where you are now in Atlanta. Maybe you could tell me a story or two. What has really surprised you? What's been like, oh my gosh, didn't think of this until I talked with the other stakeholders, and now we have, you know, X or Y or Z in the studio, and they use it every day. What can you tell us about a good surprise that came by following your own advice here?
That's a great, you know, question, Kirk. As soon as you started saying that, I started thinking in my head, oh gosh, they're about to come to me. I need to tell a story. I'm thinking, what surprised me or what got me? Well, look, first of all, and I think Chris will agree, I think Chris was talking about this a few minutes ago, no matter how well you think you've designed a studio, how well you think you've planned, how many people you spoke to, we always learn from each and every project, right? So we do what I call like a postmortem. After every project, you learn more about you know, what you can do differently next time or do better. You may walk away and think, well, we did things pretty well, but, you know, next time there's one or two things that I might do differently. When I built this facility in Atlanta not too long ago, I had things in my head from, as you said, San Francisco, from the initial work I did on the Chicago project, from the Nashville project, you know, from the Mobile project, you know, you name it. I had ideas in my head. Some things that have evolved have been things that bring costs down but look great, like wood floors that are actual tile, but they look like wood to most people, and you don't have to worry about them getting damaged, right? So that looks great. One of the things that I did when I built Nashville, that you know well at the Nash campus, that I learned then and then carried on for future projects was the way we handled lighting. I discovered Nashville was a project where we were doing visual radio and video back in about 2013, which isn't that long ago. But in terms of that technology, it was way more expensive then. There weren't as many choices, companies and manufacturers making it, at least that I was aware of. And so we knew we needed better cameras. We knew we needed better lighting. And I work with the folks at Claire Brothers, who do a lot of the big concerts and other big events around the world. I mean, these are the guys that light, you know, the Rolling Stones on concert at Garth Brooks. So I worked with them and their lighting designers in Pennsylvania and folks that had worked on Broadway before to do lighting. And one of the things that I learned is that you really need great lighting if you can afford it. It isn't that expensive anymore to get some good lighting for cameras. They generally look like track lights, but they're more designed and they have the right color temperatures and they're LED, you know, for video. And I carried that on. But here in Atlanta, for instance, in talking with the crew and the stakeholders, we determined that we knew some studios might need it, others might not. But I felt strongly that we should be prepared. So we put enough electricity in current handling capability in each of the rooms, ran some extra cables into the ceiling, ran extra SDI and IP cables that you would use, HDSDI or video. And we prepped some of the rooms for video even and ran them back as home runs to the rack room where we knew we'd put our switching gear and servers. I did that in preparation for something I thought would happen down the road. And as it turns out, a studio behind me, the lights are off, converted into a video studio. And they, in fact, are using it and they're making some revenue off of it. And they've sold, you know, some contracts for that. And the other rooms are ready to go if necessary. One of the things that surprised me or shocked me, one of the things that I had never done before, and you know it, Kirk, because you've seen it, was one day some years ago when I was doing Nashville, they came to me and said, we think we'd like to, you know, we're bringing a lot of country artists in and we're going to do all kinds of interesting things with them. Maybe we're going to do cooking or a kitchen. We also have some room in the back that doesn't look very nice outside. We want to make it into a basketball court. Of course, I thought they were joking. I literally was like, that's funny. And they're literally like, no, we mean it. And so I had to learn how to build a basketball court and how to potentially have cameras out there and lighting for day or really night, and how it could be volleyball, basketball, how I would get the logo on the court, which we did, so that it would look good in photography. So that's something that I wasn't really expecting, that didn't come up in early planning, that was brought up to me later. And luckily it was outside and outdoors where it didn't affect much of what was going on. Another thing, Kirk, that didn't come up in initial conversations, and I talk about this in my piece in the ebook. Again, people may come up to you later and ask you for things. So do the best you can to prep. Maybe you should plan on taking over a little bit more space, or having an option on extra space in case you need it. or not building, but having a room or two that can be converted to a studio. I think we've all been to facilities where there's a room that kind of looks like a studio, but has carpet or tile in it and not much else, or just a piece of furniture. And somebody says, yeah, that was going to be a studio one day, or that might be a studio in the future. We don't know. Well, think about that, because one day they came to me on a studio project and said, hey, we're going to bring a lot of artists through and we want to make a satellite room. And that's a room where the artists can sit all day and do interviews around the country. You'll see this on, you know, television, on the Entertainment Tonight or the Today Show or the BBC or ITV, or, you know, you pick your network anywhere in the world, and they do these things and they'll sit all day and they have a little backdrop. So I had to build a studio like that. So that required now special lighting, special furniture, special connectivity, and understanding how these signals are transmitted to all of the different networks that might interview somebody who was sitting there. And so we had enough infrastructure in the building to do it, but it was something that came up later that, you know, I had to think about. And by the way, if I'm ever building another facility where I think that's going to happen, even remotely, then I'm going to bring that up to the people that I'm meeting with to say, hey, is there any chance that this or that might happen? I don't know if those are great examples, but there were a couple that come to mind.
I remember when you guys built a facility in Dallas, you had some particular challenges some may have been negative, but some were kind of cool. Hey, how do we figure this out? Like a live performance space. And live performance spaces have become very popular, at least in bigger markets. I don't know about medium and smaller markets. Maybe you can spend just a minute to tell us about your experience with live performance spaces, either in Dallas or elsewhere. Maybe the smallest market to do that, that you're familiar with.
All right. Well, okay. Good question. So in Nashville, Kirk, we did a live performance space, but this was a very intimate space. It's a shared studio. I think it can hold about 16 or so people in cocktail, literally almost like cocktail swivel chairs, with little tables next to them. And it was the morning show, the network syndicated morning show studio. But we thought that we might have artists come in to perform. So we made it so that their furniture was on wheels and could be wheeled off the stage if it was ever necessary for that to happen. I'm not sure if they're doing that now or not. I haven't visited that facility for a few years. And we put some chairs in there for a small, again, intimate audience to watch a performance. So we built in for that room a whole bunch of extra snakes and mic cabling. And I talked to people in Nashville at the Grand Ole Opry and other front of house, you know, seasoned professionals about what microphones we would need. We stocked drawers full of them. What kind of mixing capability we would need and how we would do small acoustical performances. Now, that was a small one. We had cameras and lighting in there for that. And then San Francisco is a much bigger one. San Francisco can hold way many more people. That has an actual stage in it. And that one, I built it. We designed it. It looked decent. But then, guess what? The revenue folks came in a few years ago, about 4 years ago, and said, hey, we're doing this big promotion with Levi's. They're going to buy, you know, a lot of advertising on our station. We're going to do a, you know, nice partnership with them. And they want to come in and decorate the studio. So we'd like to kind of redo the interior of the live performance room studio. Call it what you want. So we spent a lot of time with the folks from Levi's Corporate in San Francisco, the folks that design the interiors of the store and do all their activations, like the Super Bowl and other things they do around the world where they're not in a store, but they bring the Levi's look and feel to some other event. Well, I worked with those guys. I learned a lot, by the way, but we redid it. We put steel in there and metal and logos and signage and even the soundproofing. And this happened in a conversation I was having with the, I brought an acoustical engineer in there and I had other general contractors and designers. And one day in a conversation, we were talking about what we would use for sound paneling, And I forget if it was my idea or somebody else's in the room. I just don't remember now. But somebody said, might have been me, the folks in San Francisco are watching, they can remind me if I'm wrong, but said, what about using the material that makes jeans? That's dark. It's blue. And the guys from Levi's that were standing said, oh, we can wrap that around a panel, I think. And the acoustical engineer said, well, a panel is about this size. I said, the way it comes off the roll at the factory where we, I guess, put it together, weave it, you know, we can do that. And the acoustical engineer, I looked at him and I said, will that work, though? Does it have the right properties? He said, I need to know more about what's in the material, but it might, and I'll look at it and I'll let you know. So the Levi's folks sent over the specs. He came back and said, yeah, I think that'll work. So you ever go to that room and you get real close up, it's like a pair of jeans. It doesn't look quite like that from a small distance. And so that was a sort of an audible, if you will, where we went and redesigned a room. But also what goes into those rooms, Kirk, is the in-ear monitor systems, the mixing console is going to be a little different, or really a lot different in many cases than you use for your on-air stuff. And by the way, if you don't have the budget, in Worcester, Massachusetts, we had a live performance room. It was an empty floor of a building that we were in. There were a bunch of folding chairs, maybe a few lights, and not much else. Yes, acoustical performances will work just fine in a room. If you need extra sound gear, you can always rent it or bring a small PA in with a front of house expert. Any town, any number of towns have somebody that can do that. And it was a nice big room. You could serve some food, do meet and greet, take photos, and it worked just fine for them. So I've seen them, you know, done on low budget. I've seen it done on high budget. But it's typically the front of house mix, potentially Pro Tools or a way to record if you're going to make CDs out of it, proper lighting, provision for cameras, and a way to make the audience feel comfortable, whether it's standing room only or chairs. In a lot of rooms that I've worked on, we have chairs that can be moved out so it can be standing room, or you can put chairs in so they can stand. I mean, there's a whole bunch of great examples online about live performance rooms if you Google it.
Gary, one of the things that makes new studios look great, and Chris too, is the guest gizmo from, did you like that segue, into from Angry Audio. We've been talking about this for about a year now, and the guest gizmo is cool for a number of reasons. It's one of the first products that Angry Audio came out with. Super well designed. What is it? It's a headphone amp and a Tally light driver for those, like those Mika mic arms, and an on, off, and cough switch that's really smart depending on the logic that's coming from your console. And the guest gizmo has one more thing that I think is super cool. Even though it's square, you drill a round hole, a 2 3/4 inch hole saw. Use that to drill a hole in your furniture, and then it just drops right in. And because of this nice thing right here, the word's not coming to me, this overlay right here, it just drops right into your 2 3/4 inch hole, and yet it looks like you have routed a square space for this to fit in. The Guest Gizmo from Angry Audio. Check it out at angryaudio.com. Again, it's got a headphone amp, super loud, good quality, just a terrific quality. It's got a wall wart for power. It has a logic port in the back, and that helps it determine whether it's going to be a cough button or whether it's going to be an on-off button for your talent. So they can actually have on-off control or cough control from one button. And then it's even got an insert point if you want to get the audio through that. Well, you can read about it more online at angryaudio.com. Thanks a lot to Angry Audio. And check out all the other cool things they have, like the new Bluetooth audio interface. So you can easily put a phone call on the air through the Bluetooth in your phone into your audio console. If you don't have a system where you've got a telephone, proper telephone hybrid and POTS lines or SIP lines, you can actually use their Bluetooth to get audio. And if you're just playing some audio out of your phone, maybe doing that makes a great way to get audio out of a phone, especially, an iPhone that doesn't even have a headphone jack anymore. Just do it with their Bluetooth adapter. AngryAudio.com. Gentlemen, we got just a few seconds for a quick tip or a final thought, and then a goodbye. Chris Tobin, you got a quick final thought before we have to go quickly?
Final thought, if you're doing design studios, whatever it is you're coming up with, listen carefully. Never say, I don't know. Just simply say, let me look into that and get you an answer. And whatever you do, never say no to anyone in the group. Just simply look at it and go, let's take the information, let's run with it. Because I've learned over the years that if I tell people I don't know, they lose confidence. And that's the last thing you want. You want confidence in your design, your approach, and everything you're doing. Because when the day comes, and it will, and you got to work with the trades and the stakeholders about some problems, or that phrase change order comes up, You want to know that when you say something, they're going to go with you with it. I'm serious. And Gary knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Gary,
what you're talking about. Change orders are just another way to spend a heck of a lot more money than you planned on. Oh, and one other thing. We didn't talk a lot about it, Kirk, but acoustics matter too, especially with live performance studios and any broadcast or podcast studio. Don't forget about acoustics.
And the good news is you can do a lot of acoustics for not a lot of money. There's even kits on Amazon.com that'll get you 80 or 90% of the way there. Always great to bring a pro in, but if you can't, you know, watch YouTube videos, figure out what needs to be dampened and what needs to be diffused. All right, we got to go. Thanks a lot to Chris Tobin and Gary Klein on This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks to you for sticking with us and watching us week after week. Next week, we have an amazing guest, Sam Matheny. He is the senior vice president at the NAB for technology. And Sam is fabulously interesting. You're going to want to watch him next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks so much to Suncast, our producer, and to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. We got to go. Tell your friends, and we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.